Okay, hi chums, that's what I say. Welcome to episode 8 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. This has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown and as part of the Never Iron Anything Honest Review Month, which has now got about a few days, week to go or something, I can't remember. My name is Tony Esmond, I'm the writer of the Hoare Chronicles, Cockney Funk, Kung Fu and Atomic Hercules. I'm joined by the hunk from the West Country, the bearded beefcake himself, Vincenzo Hunt. Hello, Vincent.
Hi, Tony. Hi. It's great to be here. I'm a listener of the show. This is the first time being on it. I must say, I'm so excited. Thank you for inviting me, Tony. This is wonderful. I can't wait to talk comics with you. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I feel like I'm on some intellectual show with you now. It's weird.
when have we ever been intellectual, Tony?
Mostly we just sort of shout boobs at each other mostly every week.
Yeah, that's true. And then occasionally we record the bits in between.
So the aim of this is to give an overview of a comic or a series in the hopes that people both find our conversation interesting, brackets, or at least not really too annoying, and head off and buy the series. And in doing so, keep themselves occupied during these trying times. Good. So, thankfully, Vincenzo, you chose something that was quite shortish, because as much as I love comics, I have been given quite a task. One person, his name is Cumber, had me reading a whole comic company. Yeah. I had Warlock, which I enjoyed very much, but is quite a complicated read. And you, fortunately, have come up with three issues of a Bronze Age run that feature a particular team. Did you want to tell us what the issues are?
Yes. Now, when this first came up and you, like, you know, asked, like, myself and Dan Butcher to pop on, it was like, you know, pick your favourite comic or a comic you want to talk about or something. And, you know, that's quite a broad question as well, isn't it, when you have to think about it. It's like, oh. So I was thinking, oh, you know, could it be... And my mind drew a blank for a long time.
Yeah, you had to think for ages. Dan was straight away with one. Which I would have recorded with him yesterday, but he said, no, I don't do that one. He's going to do something else, so I've got to revise that one now instead.
He just loves giving you more work.
Yeah, it'll change again just to wind me up, I reckon.
Yeah. Obviously I love, like, Stormforce from the old Battle comics and stuff, but I didn't know if that... You know when you love something, but you're not sure if it's going to be a talk, you know, how much of a talking point it is.
Yeah, I suppose the condition was that I had to be able to get hold of it as well, wasn't it?
I suppose
it was the other part of it.
So. Yeah. And then I went to an issue that I've talked about a few times with people, which is the Marvel Team-Up, Spider-Man and Havoc, which was just one issue. And I picked that one purely because, you know, when I was a kid, that was one of the highlights.
Yeah, but then we didn't go
No, I didn't go with that one. I went for something different because I thought rather than a series, rather than a whole team, I wanted to shine a light on a group of characters that are much loved by me. I'm not going to say I'm an aficionado in them. I'm not an encyclopedia of their history.
Well, they have appeared a few times recently, but it's not been as good as it used to be with them.
Yes, and whenever they appear, they're normally completely, you know, screwed over. They're like, you know, they've been pushed down the list. It's almost D-list, and it's almost like when you see them in modern comics or, well, actually, just probably comics of the past couple of decades, they're not really shown any respect.
They're sort of brought on just to give a kick into, aren't they?
Yeah, and they go by the name of Henry Camp, Brian Philip Kaluski, Dr. Elliot Franklin, and Dirk Garthwaite. What a brilliant name.
Dirk Garthwaite? That's what I'm changing your name in my phone to from now on.
Oh, well, yeah, amazing. Yeah. They are also known as Bulldozer, Piledriver, Thunderball, and Wrecker, and they are the Wrecking Crew. And I absolutely love them. They're not one of those, you know, even when it comes to like the movies or like a lot of the animations, they don't get picked for stuff. They just seem prime. They're just so good.
Yeah.
Over the years.
And like, great. You know.
Yeah, they are absolutely. For me, they're the best looking villain team.
Yeah.
And I got into them, little history, when I first sort of discovered them.
Yeah.
It was I think it's Secret Wars, and okay, not necessarily the comics, but I remember when I was really young and I had like a sticker album when sticker albums were a thing. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I can't remember who the Wrecking Crew went up against, but they just visually immediately, I just thought they looked absolutely awesome.
Right.
And like, you know, so whenever I saw them, I just thought this is brilliant. And just over the years, I know they're not, I would say they're not the most intelligent team, but we'll get into the fact that one of them might be quite intelligent.
Yeah, I didn't realize
one of them is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, you know, as you read comics more, and then I just thought, oh God, they're just, you know, the people that have the talent but never get the opportunity in comics. That's what it felt like to me.
To me, they're like classic bank robber villains. They're designed to rob a bank or an armored car or something like that, you know.
Yeah. But when you think about their power set, it's something like, let's not forget that they could go toe-to-toe with Thor. It's that sort of, you know, they're not to be, it's not like Stilt Man or something like that. Actually, I don't know too much about Stilt Man.
But he's got stilts, that's all you need to know. Should we go in a bit into the history? So they actually, this, what we're talking about here is Defenders issue 17 to 19, which 17 is the origin issue of the Wrecking Crew, but the Wrecker, Dirk Garthwaite, he first appeared in Thor. So he was actually a creation of Stan and Jack. He was a sort of manual labourer, member of a demolitions team. And he sort of, did he go into a hotel room and put on Loki's helmet or something?
He was mistaken for Loki.
That's right.
I think, yeah. And then someone imbued him with the power of like the Nordic sort of, you know, superpowers. And with the crowbar. It's all in the crowbar. So he was stood toe-to-toe. And actually says in one of the issues, like, I think Thor had to sort of take him down in like a subway.
Yeah, and he electrocutes him, I think, doesn't he, or something like that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So he was a stand-up dude. He was quite a dude. When you think he's going up against Thor, and then he gets put in prison, and he meets these three guys: Henry, Brian, and Dr. Elliot. And they sort of escape, and he sort of, because the origin's in one of these issues. I think it's in 18, isn't it?
It is in 18. Yeah. The funny thing about these issues is the classic sort of old school Marvel as well. Because I picked up these issues. I'm not I know you're a big Defenders fan, aren't you? You've got a lot of the issues and stuff. But these were probably some of the first Defenders issues that I got. And it was purely like when I went to a comic mart, it was like, you know, part of the joy is like having a little bit of a list, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like, you know, searching.
I was at that comic mart. We went to the cafe afterwards and you showed me very excitedly that you'd bought it.
Yeah. Because I thought, well, you know, I'd love a first appearance of something. And it's like, well, the Wrecking Crew, they're like some of my favourites.
It's affordable, isn't it? It's an affordable era, you know.
And I think it says a lot about almost the way they're sort of treated as well, that like these issues were like a couple of pound each.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Whereas, stuff, isn't it?
You know, yeah, the first appearance of a lot of characters, as soon as it's got first appearance on the sticker, the price goes up quite a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it was another classic example of first appearance. Oh, it's the last page.
Yeah. Isn't it the last two pages?
It's the last two pages. A fantastic last two pages as well. That is, so, I remember, I sort of Googled at one point, like, original artwork of that, and that was going for a pretty penny, but it's stunning stuff.
Yeah, sounds great. Yeah. Well, let's go through the creators, and we'll go through issue 17, have a little chat. There's a couple of things that sort of arise out of that issue.
Yeah.
So it's called Power Play. It's written by Len Wein, the Mighty Wein. Art by Sal Buscema. Inks by Dan Green. Danik Green inks two of these issues, and there's a different person on the third one, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Once again this week, Glynis Wein, so the wife of someone involved, has coloured it. I'm not saying that it was a secondary role for Glynis, because she coloured a lot of stuff. A. Konecki did the letters, and Roy Thomas was the editor of this. The cover is by Ron Wilson and Al Milgram, so that's the second week running Mr. Milgram's had a mention. And Ron Wilson was a mainstay for many years of Marvel 2-in-1, which we also talked about last week. I'm a huge Ron Wilson fan. I've got a thing of his on the wall next to my desk.
I would say, for me personally, in the lineup of the three issues, this is the my least favourite cover.
Okay.
It feels like between 17 and 18, it's almost like the age of the comic completely jumps. Do you know what I mean? 17 looks like quite a vintage cover,
right?
Like before, because these were 70s, weren't they? These were in the 70s.
Yeah.
It looks like an older sort of cover. I think with the way that the Hulk's drawn as well.
Yeah, I think you're right.
One.
It's a crowded cover. There's not much background in it, is there?
Yeah, and there's more in the ways of like speech bubbles and things like that.
Yeah. The cover is by those two. I suspect Ron was probably on pencils and Al did inks. And it's the appearance of Power Man. So Luke Cage, a.k.a. Power Man, in his classic 70s sort of open neck yellow shirt and silver headband, is sort of charging at them. The Hulk's
he had only been around for a short time. Yeah,
very, very much a short time. And he appeared in a couple of books around this time. So he was a sort of de facto... He applied for the job of the Thing in the Fantastic Four when the Thing left the Fantastic Four. So he was sort of filled in for a short amount of time. And he appeared in Defenders as well. So I'm not sure if they tried... I think Luke Cage sort of landed with a bit of a splash. And I think it was thought of as a good book, which it was. And I think they were looking to spread the popular love. The Defenders never suffered from brilliant sales. You know, it was never like a huge selling book. And maybe that's why they stuck him in there. And they do that throughout the run. There's sort of various sort of guests come in. Let's go to the opening. So it opens with Nighthawk. I'm a fan of Nighthawk's costume.
Now, this is interesting because, like, for instance, obviously I bought these issues for, obviously, the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
But part of the joy I had when I first read this was, like, the first issue is nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
So I was just I was discovering this comic book team. Do you know what I mean? It says a lot to you know, we've talked about in the past accessibility to comics and stuff.
Yep.
And I came in, I knew really nothing about Nighthawk.
Okay.
Certainly this version of him. There's been a couple of versions of him.
There's been various versions of him, yeah. Yeah, there have been.
Yeah.
And it's quite a confusing character to get your head around occasionally.
Yeah.
This is kind of the first one. He started as a villain. He also started as a rip-off of Batman. So as a team that...
I can see that. I can see that.
And he sort of steps away from that role a bit in the Defenders. He was created by Roy Thomas and Sal Buscema. He even had a butler called Pennyworth, believe it or not. Did you catch that as you were reading?
Yeah, because that's going all the way through it, isn't it? That's a sort of background.
That's a kind of almost a reason for the fight, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
He was a playboy, and he was a sort of rich playboy. At college, he went drink driving, and he paralysed his girlfriend, Mindy, which gets revisited, I think, about another 50 issues onwards. So that I think she turns up again. He would try to join the army. He got turned down, and he decided to create a serum that gave him enhanced strength at night. And he's got Iron Man-ish wings. He's got like a booster pack under them. As it goes on, he gets kind of like Wolverine-esque claws. And it sounds a funny thing to say, but I just quite like his mask. I quite like his cowl with the sort of...
The weird things by the eyes, the wings by the eyes, that's a...
Underneath the eyes and over, isn't
that's
it?
That's a crazy detail.
Yeah.
That's a crazy...
Yeah, but it kind of works. I kind of like it. They brought out an action figure of him a couple of years ago, and I was very tempted. But it was the sort of Wolverine claws one, is sort of the Herb Trimpe kind of version, which I didn't like as much as the Sal Buscema version. Mm. But yeah, he's an interesting character. Anyway, it starts with him trying to ride a Valkyrie's winged horse called Aragorn. Now, having not read this comic for 30 years, and I went, "Oh, Aragorn, oh,
yeah." Yeah,
I wonder where Roy got that name from.
Yeah, I will say as well. Like, I think it's Len Wein, isn't it? What's the name they keep? Hopalong Cassidy. That's a name that comes up several times in the space of a couple of issues.
Yeah.
They got a big thing for like cowboys and that sort of.
Yeah, was Hopalong Cassidy an old TV star or something like that?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's so he tries to ride this sort of bucking bronco kind of winged horse, and that doesn't work out for him. And then Valkyrie decides she's going to go off and do something or other, which we get an interlude from later on. And she heads off in a cab, and everyone kisses her. And there's a bit of a Me Too incident, isn't there, with Nighthawk, where he sort of grabs her and firmly kisses her on the mouth. You know?
Yeah.
A bit like I do with you two guys. You know, similar.
Oh, well, yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, I mean... That's more invasive, if you ask me.
So that's strange. But it's okay. I'm rolling with it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we get Luke Cage sort of appear.
I mean, before that happens, of course, you've got Nighthawk. Because Hulk, after this, this is a Hulk that we haven't seen in... Well, this sort of Hulk was quite funny to read.
Yeah, he's quite moody, isn't he? Childlike.
He's moody. He's only, like... probably about 5 inches taller than Doctor Strange.
Yep.
And like, yeah, he's moody and he decides to just go off. So in the space of like 2 pages, Valkyrie has left. Hulk's gone off in a mood. Before this, Namor has left the team, which has left just Nighthawk with Doctor Strange just sort of going, why does everyone leave?
I know.
Is it my fault?
The Hulk sort of has a hissy fit, doesn't he? Like, my friend's left and he sort of wanders off.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's played for laughs a lot in the Defenders book. There's one famous incident where he eats beans. They all sit around the table and he eats a lot of beans. And he just says Hulk likes beans and stuff like this. It's a strange combination. What's your thoughts on Doctor Strange? Are you a Doctor Strange fan? Or?
I am a Doctor Strange fan.
Yeah.
But I haven't read too much Doctor Strange. It's one of those things where I just love the idea of Doctor Strange. And he's always the ones that whenever I read older issues, it's just a joy to read the absolute nonsense that comes out of his mouth.
It is. He's very melodramatic and he's very, like, he's always fainting. There are
moments of real arrogance as well as it goes on. You see it a couple of times in these issues that it sort of that kind of happens.
Yeah.
But here he's just left with Nighthawk, isn't he? He's sort of and they have to go to this building because these buildings are being destroyed by the Wrecking Crew, who no one's seen at this time.
Yeah.
Which I thought was even though they're not really in it until the last page, to have that set up was really nice, actually. You know, there was a real build-up to them actually appearing.
Yeah, because we get the classic hero versus hero to sort of fill a bit of time in, don't we?
Yeah.
So Luke Cage fights them, obviously. Yeah.
And the fights are so good as well. They are the fights that, you know, people are talking as they're throwing punches or getting punched in the face and stuff, which maybe we're a little bit more critical of these days with modern comics.
Yeah.
But I think that there's certainly a charm to the older comics, isn't it? Like, you know, people would like almost have like an entire conversation as they're ducking a punch.
Yeah, and say really shit things. So there's at one point...
I didn't realise Power Man used the word sugar.
Yeah, he does. He says, and now, sugar, I'm going to take you apart. I wrote that one down. I like that one. Yeah,
yeah. Sugar, something tells me I won't let them fireworks touch me. Yeah, that's that sort of stuff. And he calls, keeps calling Nighthawk a joker.
Yeah. And he says, and at one point Nighthawk says, hi, guy, remember me? Just wanted to make sure you were looking me straight in the eye while I blackened both of yours.
Yeah. Yeah, and then after that came a bit of dialogue when Luke Cage says, too late, Joker, my eyes came black like the rest of me.
I know.
It's
a little bit cringy, that moment. Accidental racism, I'm going to say, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that's clearly a white man who's who's written that.
But having read and listened to Mr. Ween a number of times, he's the nicest guy. I'm sure it was nothing meant by it. You know, it's just
God, mate. I mean, the Luke Cage character has a complete over the top charm to him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do you think of the art, dude? What's your feelings on the art?
Oh, I love the art in this. Right. This is Sal Buscema for most of it, isn't it? Sal Buscema.
All three issues are Sal. Sal's inked by Dan.
There's a couple of pages where I think it doesn't look like it's him.
Right. Issue three.
I think it's the first page of issue three, actually.
Yeah, we'll get onto that definitely.
Yeah. But just the fights are so kinetic. And, you know, it's just great. It's just hugely fun stuff.
Yeah.
You do feel it like when. Because it's a proper fight, even though it's happening like on scaffold and stuff. You know, when they're hitting girders and the girders are bending, you know, it feels like a superhero fight as well.
Yeah. It also feels like a street level superhero fight, which I kind of liked. We don't have to go into like the stupid dimension that Doctor Strange would take us into if this was his comic, you know.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. Yeah. A couple of things about Sal. Sal is born Silvio Buscema, the younger brother of four and the younger brother to John. If you think of a Marvel character in the 70s, chances are probably Sal drew it. He started on Gunhawk, which is a Western written by Jerry Siegel. He inked his brother, but I think Joe Sinnott started inking John Buscema on the first Silver Surfer series, which is like a grail for me. I love that first issue. It's a brilliant, amazing series. And he didn't like it, allegedly. John didn't like Joe's inking. Which I think may have been for a reason, that he just wanted his brother to get his brother some work. So his brother ended up inking him on that. for a while he sort of bragged that he could do 6 to 8 pages a week out, and then when he was on the Hulk, he moved into doing, I think, 10 pages a week. He penciled 100 issues of Spectacular Spider-Man, and latterly did quite a lot of inking. I really like the simplicity. I started reading, after reading this, I thought, right, I need to read some more sounds. So I went and read some of the Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man issues from the start, which he worked on. And they're not super detailed. He's never been a sort of super detailed artist. And his line work isn't as classical as his brother, I'm going to say. But it's good story.
I mean, this is classic sort of Marvel artwork for me.
Yeah.
Just especially in the if we go back to the fight between Nighthawk and Luke Cage, that's just spot on. Yeah. Just cracking, like, storytelling, and, like, you know, it's simple, some would say, but, you know, I think that's there's still a lot of detail going on.
I think one of my favorite pages is 14, where he sort of Nighthawk has hurt his fist, and you get this scene where Luke Cage jumps at him. Nighthawk leaps over him and kicks him as he's coming off the other side, and that's the best moment. That kinetically, as a sort of choreographed ballet of a fight, that works so well.
Yeah,
it's got an implication. Yeah. It's got a middle. It's got a strike. You feel the energy going across and down the page. You know, it's really good. I have to say, I really like.
And when the building sort of falls on them as well, you know, obviously, like, you have, even though they're trying to stop it because they came here to. What, Luke Cage has been hired to look after this building, and it ends up falling on their heads.
Yeah.
But there's panels like when the skyscraper is toppling down, and it's great. It's absolutely fantastic, sort of just the motion and, like, you know, the actual carnage of it. You know, you never lose sight of what it is as well. It could have just been a mess.
Yeah.
Those sort of pages, but you still know exactly what it is with the girders and everything, and yeah, it's just wonderful stuff.
I think
wonderful
stuff. And the thing about this is, it's pretty much, apart from maybe one or two interludes, it's just basically one big fight all the way through, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. On the copy, I mean, that's essentially what a lot of these issues are. Actually, they don't mess about, do they? They just get stuck straight into it. On the copy that you have, did you read it digitally or was it there?
No, I've got it. I've got them both. So I've got the issues, but I'm reading it here on the Marvel app.
Yeah, on the app, I was wondering if they changed this on the app. On the actual issues, underneath every single sort of page of artwork on the left hand side, it has like a little message.
Oh yeah,
like,
so in two, like, pages
on the left. Well, you've got like continued after the next page, but it sort of says on the last two pages, it says Doctor Strange girds himself for the final battle with the Silver Dagger. It's like their promo for other issues.
Yeah, that was quite common at that little period. Yeah.
But did you ever notice that when you were reading them when you were younger?
Yeah, I remember them quite distinctly, that sort of thing. Yeah, because it was part of Stan's big thing about, you know, promoting other titles from within the title you're reading. Yeah, so it would be the Hulk, or, you know, what's happening in the Fantastic Four this week, or, you know, Ultron appears in the Avengers issue 196. You know, it's like that sort of thing.
Yeah. I never really noticed it before when I've looked at older
issues. It didn't happen forever. It's only a little period that it happened. But, yeah, I remember. Yeah, I kind of liked it. And then even that stuff about the story continues in two pages' time or something, that didn't stay about for long either.
Yeah. And, a lot of the time we may complain about adverts in comics, but there's always been adverts in comics, and there's a lot of them here. And some of them, looking back on old comics, they're an absolute joy to look at some of these adverts.
Yeah.
I just want to rush the coupon off now for the free book of Muscle Fighter.
Oh, I bet you have a bit of Muscle Fighter.
Oh, who doesn't?
Right, should we move on to the next issue? Should we go on to 18?
Well, I think we need, before then, we need to, obviously the last two pages are the big reveal of the series. Now, I think for a reveal of a team and a bunch of characters, I think it's a pretty spectacular one.
Yeah, it's definitely stuck in my mind from when I read it as a kid. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I will say the bulldozer must have changed his costume because when I like the bulldozer, I know he's got like sort of the metallic helmet and stuff, but he's wearing orange. He's got like an orange costume. I didn't realize that when he first arrived, he's essentially just got his hairy chest out and he's just wearing a pair of brown trousers along with the. That was a That was a shock.
That's a nightmare scene when you wander into the wrong club on a Sunday night drunk.
I mean, it certainly is. All you have to do is colour that the metallic bits sort of like dark grey, and it's like he's wearing a gimp mask,
yeah,
isn't
it?
Is.
Yeah. But, yeah. I always thought he had the shittest power, to be fair. I always thought, oh, the Wrecking Crew, I'd rather be the Wrecker, and then the geezer with the ball, I kind of Thunderball, I kind of liked him. And the geezer with the big fists, that's quite interesting. You know, but that geezer has to run at things with his head. He's a bit of a sort of shit juggernaut, isn't he? But, you know.
Yeah. Is this pre-Juggernaut?
No.
Oh, yeah. Right. So he is. Yeah, he's essentially like a poor man's.
He is a bit, isn't he?
Not a mutant sort of Juggernaut sort of thing. You do get a real sort of sense of how powerful he is in the next couple of issues, yeah, though, which is quite nice. He seems to be one, you know, the one that they almost have the most trouble dealing with.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I love that final page, which is on issue 18, is then sort of
squashed,
shown again, squashed into one page. I would absolutely love this page of original artwork.
Yeah, I love the word panels that are just pointing down. Yeah. I really like that.
Yeah.
So they kind of, it's very explanatory, isn't it? As was Stan's one at the time, and he sort of, these are on this side the defenders, Doctor Strange, Nighthawk, and Luke Cage, Power Man, who come here to protect this newly built building from harm and failed. You know, it's like, oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
You don't need to know much, do you? You know.
No. No. And it's just spot on. I wonder how much. I sometimes when you see these sort of pages, do you ever sort of like just Google to see what sort of price they are? Not necessarily buy them, but just to see how much they're worth.
Yeah, I know. I bet this is a few thousand, isn't it? It's got
Yeah, I expect so.
Okay, so.
Yeah, so the creators of the issue.
Yeah, so the creators
18,
are the same.
Yeah.
But the cover is by Gil Kane. Do you know who inked it?
No.
Dave Cockrum. So Dave Cockrum
created
the new X-Men, the Uncanny X-Men.
I can see that with these inks, actually.
Yeah.
How solid they are.
Yeah, it's not.
It's very reminiscent of the classic X-Men cover.
It is, really is, isn't it? You see it, most I see it is with Thunderball on the right hand side there. So when you think this is a Gil Kane cover, it's not very Gil Kane. The figure drawing or the layout is Gil Kane, I'd say. More than the figure drawing. The Hulk maybe, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice cover. I like that cover. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great cover.
So otherwise the interior is the same. So Len's back on writing again. Sal and Dan Green on illustration, Glynis Ween, Dave Hunt lettering. So different letterer, and Roy Thomas is the editor. So this is basically, it carries on. It sort of carries on. The confrontation takes off. The police arrive. You discover that Thunderball's ball, is slightly mystical because he throws it and it does a sort of sideways away from one of Doctor Strange's power bolts, isn't it?
Doctor Strange goes to blast it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And it actually sort of goes around the blast, which is quite cool.
Yeah.
And then absolutely obliterates some police cars. I mean, the death and destruction that must have been thrown about. They didn't think about it in the old comics, though, did they? It's like, oh, that car's being completely smashed up. Hold on, there was someone in there.
Yeah. It's a bit like the Death Star, isn't it? The thing as well is, Len's got this sort of weird way, because these sort of brutes of men. So you got Pile Driver saying, "Hey, boss, them cop cars is still coming." And then you've got Bulldozer saying, "Anything you say, chief." Yeah, they talk.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say they talk like New Yorkers. They talk like children, like toddlers.
Yeah. Yeah, those two are clearly the...
brawn.
Yeah, the simplest of the lot. Because obviously Wrecker still has to, you know, and I think they do sort of reinforce that he's probably the strongest one out of them in terms of like his power set, because they, you know, they don't like to, it's not like they weaken him by giving him a team, do they?
I will get onto that origin, because that's coming, isn't it, in a minute. It's a strange one. But they do keep with the story, so they keep with the fact that Dr. Elliot Franklin actually speaks like a normal person. So he's fighting Luke Cage, and he says, "I've heard of you, Cage. They say you're a hero for hire. I don't know how much you're being paid for this, mister, but believe me, it isn't enough." So he can actually speak in sentences compared to the other two. And we find out why that is because later on we find out that Dr. Elliot Franklin is, and I quote, "the Black Bruce Banner."
Now, this seems to be, I mean, that wording is once again enough to, it's a double take wording,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
yeah.
It really is a double take wording. It's also something that I think after it was stated in that panel, the world kind of forgot about. If you think about, because everyone, Bruce Banner, constantly talked about it as being like one of the geniuses of the Marvel universe. And you know, you got your Pyms and you got your Starks and stuff, but Bruce Banner's probably one of the tops, isn't he? And in that sort of, I mean, is he the one stating that in a narrative?
I think he is
that...
later on. I've got a feeling he is. Yeah, I think I wrote down that he's the one who said it.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you could probably get away with it. But if this guy is seriously as good as that, it seriously doesn't show over the years, does it?
Yeah, I mean, Marvel were trying for the diversity. I mean, but they did occasionally just name characters. Like, we had Black Goliath, and everyone winces a little bit when they hear that, don't they? You know?
Yeah, yeah. And but Thunderball's a, you know, he's a great character. He's another one that's got a fantastic look as well. You know,
it's an old school look. I like the gauntlets. I like it all. Yeah.
And you kind of forget that he's intelligent because of the way like they're just sort of those characters have just been written as just heavies to basically turn up and then get beaten up by a team and then they're off again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're probably in some sort of jail right now in the Marvel Universe, or forgotten about.
There's an absorbing man quality to him as well, isn't there? You know.
I think he was when I first discovered the Wrecking Crew. I think absorbing man was with them. In Secret Wars.
Of course, yeah.
So I've always kind of I've had that. That set of them, that's always been in my mind. Because his Absorbing Man's quite cool as well. He was quite a big deal as well.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, oh, no, huge, and still continues to be. Yeah, a good character. Mm. Yeah, so we talk a little bit about the writing. What's your thoughts on the writing? Because it's a little bit on the nose, but it's just an action comic, is it? Is that how it works?
It is just a straight... You know, it's a fight, isn't it? It's one of those classic, introduce the villains, then show what the villains can do. And then in an issue's time, we have to defeat the villains. That is, you know, it's that classic setup, isn't it? You had like two or three issues for an arc, and it's hardly a big story. There's not massive world-changing story beats going on. I mean, the reason that the Wrecking Crew are there is because a Thunderball has created a gamma bomb, you know, as you do. Which is something apparently not even Bruce Banner could control it like that. And they didn't want you. This is the thing that blew my mind. He went to his bosses and they didn't want to listen to him. And then he tried stealing it. And while he was running away, he threw it into a vat of steel.
That's it, yeah.
And the steel was turned into the girders, which made the buildings. So,
yeah.
So he knew it was in one building somewhere in New York. They just had to go through and destroy them all.
That's a weird one, isn't it? I remember hearing a story about the Richardsons in London on telly, and they were saying that they used to bury, like, whenever they were building a multi-story car park, they used to throw the bodies into the concrete. It's a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah. But not as dark.
So,
but there is, 18 does have that brilliant, you know, in two pages, you've got the origin issue.
Yeah.
Of the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, and they all sort of get electrified and suddenly turn into the Dream Boys. There's a bit of that going on,
isn't
there?
Yeah, it's that classic, you know, I can give you powers. How are you going to do that? Just hold on to this crowbar, and when lightning strikes, it will be all right.
Yeah, and...
although he says, why not? What have we got to lose? Only your lives, chum.
Yeah,
only your lives.
Yeah, and they come out there, because they're quite ordinary-looking guys to start with, aren't they? One of them looks a bit like Sergeant Bullock from Batman. And they sort of come out of it looking like very buff. That's what electricity would do when you're holding a mystic crowbar. That's how it works.
Yeah. You just got to be in the right sort of place for lightning to strike you.
Yeah. Now, I was thinking, it's only recently that I watched that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and realised that that film is, isn't that called The Wrecking Crew? The film within the film.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I wonder whether they got the
name
from there.
When the film isn't about Brad Pitt driving a car.
Yeah, that's cool. I wonder if he got that from there. Maybe. Who knows? But Len Wein, legendary, legendary Marvel writer, Marvel and DC writer, creator of Swamp Thing and Wolverine. He was the editor on Watchmen. He was a childhood friend of Marv Wolfman's, believe it or not, and they both went for a tour around the DC offices together, and then he got a job at DC and sort of jumped about a bit between DC and Marvel over the years. But he wrote for a host of other people. So he wrote Justice Machine for Kamiko. He wrote some of the Simpsons books over at Bongo Comics. He wrote Nightmare, which was a Skyworld black and white magazine, like horror magazine. He wrote Airboy for Eclipse, a couple of issues of that. He didn't stay on many books for very long. But he was sort of famous for being able to write anything, really, I think. For example, he wrote Tarzan and Legion of Superheroes at the same time. He wrote Weird War Tales, Spider-Man, Kull, the X-Men. But he did do, he's probably the run he's probably most famous for, is he did The Incredible Hulk from 179 to 220, plus a couple of annuals, and which was obviously the Wolverine issue, which is where he created Wolverine in 180 and then into 181. He was a regular on the TV show What's My Line in New York, because he was quite a raconteur. He was on these sort of characters.
Really?
Yeah. He was famous for having sort of legendary parties where people used to go round and, you know, it would be Chris Claremont in one corner and Frank Miller would be, you know, getting drunk in another. He was quite a sort of a bon viveur kind of character. And then he worked and wrote for a lot of animated stuff. He did New Frontier, X-Men, Phantom 2040. Reboot, and he did a lot more other stuff. So he sort of disappeared off into cartoons and then came back again, and he came back for a number of things, but he did a couple of issues of Before Watchmen, was it called? Do you remember that?
The recent?
Yeah, from maybe 8-9 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that, wasn't it?
And he did Dollar Bill and a couple of other ones. Trying to think what the other ones were, but he did who's the villain in Watchmen,
Ozymandias
book, I think. Yeah he did a few, but I remember the Dollar Bill book he did with Steve Rude, which was really good, really interesting.
Nice.
I heard an interview from him recently. I was listening to a couple of interviews in preparation for tonight, and he was saying, how brilliant the Dollar Bill book was, and he was like, thanks a lot, you know, sort of thing. He said the art was incredible by Steve Rude, and he said, yeah, Steve's great, but he doesn't really draw anything, does he? Everyone's sort of in shadow. You can't really see what they're doing. Yeah, and I thought, okay. But he was sort of nice about it. Yeah. But Len's great, and I'd highly recommend his Swamp Thing run. And I'm a big fan of all that period of the Hulk. I think it's a really great run, really interesting stuff going on.
Was his Hulk very much like the Hulk that we get in this?
His Hulk was sort of leaping about across America, and it was like a monster of the week kind of thing. It was a bit of that.
Was he very talkative? Because this is a talkative Hulk.
Yeah, I remember reading The Defenders and thinking, even as a kid, The Defenders is where the Hulk talks a lot, because he didn't really talk much elsewhere. He did a bit of talking, but not much, a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I will tell you that he learned the value of friendship in Marvel Team-Up number 27, which may still be on sale if you've been good.
Oh, is that what it says?
That's what it says.
That's great. Oh, brilliant. Well, see, I don't have that. I'm going to have to dig mine out now. Yeah. So they have a sort of full-on fight, and they're in trouble at one point, aren't they, the Defenders? They're not doing brilliantly. Yeah.
Well, it's I think Doctor Strange, like, almost sort of, he starts siphoning off the power of the Wrecking Crew. Yeah. So they've got them kind of where they need them, but it takes all of his concentration. Before this, Doctor Strange has also set up some invisible barrier so to stop the Wrecking Crew from getting out.
Yep.
And while he's concentrating on defeating the Wrecking Crew, his mind is almost ripped in two because the Hulk turns up and ruins everything.
That's right.
by smashing through this invisible barrier, therefore taking Doctor Strange immediately out of the fight.
Yep.
He just drops like a sack of potatoes.
Again, said he's always fainting.
And when that happens, and this was a really interesting sort of turn of events, the Wrecking Crew just absolutely just smash them. They just lay into them, completely lay into them. And the Wrecker goes to choke the Hulk, which apparently...
You did it.
Yeah, well, who doesn't choke the Hulk from time to time? Oh, God.
Yeah, he does the classic sort of from behind. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hulk, yeah, and Hulk throws him and he says, "Impossible, no one but Thor has ever broken my death grip before." He's probably only used it once before on Thor, so yeah. And he's two for two in terms of failures.
He's not overly experienced as a supervillain, is he?
No.
Let's face it. Yeah.
No. No, but yeah, and then while all this is going on, they find the doctor, the good doctor, finds his gamma bomb, but the case is empty.
Yeah. Like an Easter egg, I thought, when I saw that as a kid.
Yeah, it was like an Easter egg. It's a bit of a sort of a random shape, isn't it, really?
It's like a football that opens up, or an American football that opens up, and there's nothing in it, and they're surprised. No problem, Wrecker. The catch on the case is already loose enough. Oh, it's already loose enough. Oh, my Lord. Who says, oh, my Lord? Who says that? And it's empty.
I do now.
And then it says the next issue is He Could Slay the World, but that is not the title of the next issue. The next issue is entitled Doomball. Yeah. We missed out a little bit of a moment with Valkyrie, because she sort of wanders off, gets involved in some weird cult.
where was that going, because I obviously haven't read since, but it's just a little bit strange.
Yeah, well, it goes, the Defenders goes proper off on one soon, because we'll talk about who created this issue, but as of next issue it's Steve Gerber, and Gerber is just nuts. You know, Gerber's a guy who did Howard the Duck, and his Defenders is bordering on the bin, and that nuts, and all sorts of weird things happen, elf with a gun and all sorts of things, you know, Fool Killer turns up. It's quite a run with Gerber. It's probably my favorite, him and Dak, who comes on and does it later on. Yes, it's a weird one, but the art on this is different, isn't it? Did you notice that straight away, or when you were reading it as a kid, did it play up to you, or
what the first page of the issue 19? Well, immediately the first page looks very different. It's also, in some ways, it reminds me of the classic Justice League International
I was
sort
say
of
that
layout.
Myself. Yeah, so it's.
Because we've got the villains and the heroes all lined up. You know, after having this massive fight, it seems like there's a moment of peace.
Yeah.
That the heroes have just stopped to actually figure out what's going on. Hulk's like rubbing his head and looks a little
scratching his hair. I love what he does there. Yeah. The creative team on this one is the cover is by Gil Kane again. Probably my favourite cover. Mm-hmm. Sort of them standing over. That's much more Gil Kane-y than the previous one, I'd say. It's got that sort of line work.
Yeah.
The script is by Chris Claremont, believe it or not, who's kind of something gun at Marvel around that time, you know, sort of ish. Len Wein on plot. Now, I think that's important to remember, because Len Wein's on plot because he becomes the editor as of the next issue, Len. So he moves from being writer to editor. So he's kind of got a guiding hand on the story, but I would say Claremont probably writes all the dialogue, etc., you know. Sal Buscema's still on it, God bless him. But the inker is Klaus Janson, which is interesting, because Klaus went on to be the inker on Miller's Daredevil, and also was sort of, I think towards the end of Miller's run, Miller kind of was just kind of doing rough layouts, if you believe the stories. And Klaus was sort of filling in a lot of the stuff. And Klaus is a...
And the inking does have a different sort of feel to it.
It's very Byrne-like, John Byrne suddenly. You know, where on the heads of characters, Buscema wouldn't put much shade in. You've got like all muscles shaded in. You know, the Hulk's face is in much more detail on this page, isn't it? You know, there's.
Yeah.
It's like I can imagine Klaus maybe added a lot more than he perhaps would do, a normal inker would do, you know?
Yeah.
So Klaus started as an assistant of Dick Giordano's. He was first published in Jungle Action 6. He was an inker with a very strong visual style, and. He worked with many creators, but I have to say, the one that I really enjoyed him outside of Miller was he worked on Gene Colan's stuff in Detective over at DC, moved over to DC, and worked on Detective Comics on the Batman story on Jem, Son of Saturn, if you can remember that.
Oh, my God.
And he often now teaches, he's still in Kinney, he often now teaches at the School of Visual Arts in New York, believe it or not. There you go. A little bit about Klaus.
He's a big gun when it comes to inkers,
he's the one. He really is for me. Him and Austin, the two. You know, maybe Neary.
Mm.
So interestingly, so we've got the four big guns there. But did you notice who was doing the colouring?
Look at it now. Bill Mantlo.
How weird is that? The comics generally known as a comics writer, creator of Rocket Raccoon and a number of other characters, and he's colouring this issue, which I thought was strange.
Yeah, and it's Artie Simek is on the lettering as well. That's a name I've seen quite a few times.
Yeah, he shows up a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And Roy Thomas still is the editor, which I thought was just a strange one. I had to sort of double take when it said Bill Mantlo there. So,
yeah,
almost a change in direction, but still with Sal on pencils. And as the book goes on, you really feel the effect of Klaus on the art. You feel it's much more detailed, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
There's some sort of shadow work he does on. If you go to page 6. Where Doc Strange is sort of, he says, in the name of the omnipotent Oshtur, I say you hold. There's
sort of interesting
shadow work going on there. You didn't really generally see.
It's got like a half-tone pattern and stuff, which you see a lot of people sort of using as like their digital brushes for a lot of digital work now. That sort of stuff.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Then you get Thunderball's origin. We get a bit of that as well. So we get him where he describes himself as a black... the Black Bruce Banner, and
Black Bruce Banner
hold a ball, and he dropped it in the AKA bomb. and he was a nuclear physicist. And then he was working at Richmond Enterprises, which is kind of the crux of why it's a Defenders story. So it's all kind of tied in, which was very Claremont to me. Claremont had this sort of. Claremont would famously run A, B, and C stories, so A would be the main one. He'd start introducing B, and he'd hint at C, and that would be like an ever-revolving technique that he used that worked, you know. And pushing that little bit of Richmond Enterprises, to me, felt a bit like a style of his writing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You definitely see the Chris Claremont in a lot of it as well, because some of these pages are pretty wordy.
Yeah, they are, that's true. My favourite moment is when Doctor Strange creates a banquet for a hobo. That's my favourite.
that was another WTF moment for me. But he doesn't just create it. Did you notice he takes it from somewhere else?
Oh, does he? Oh, okay. Does he? Where does he take it from?
Yeah. He pulls it out of thin air. Says, "Come, Defenders. I don't think the Plaza will miss one gourmet dinner." So he's stolen a gourmet dinner. To give to, I mean, he's obviously giving it to the homeless, so that's quite nice.
I must eat at the Plaza more because it's very fancy for one single meal, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, blimey, he's got four courses and everything there, and two sets of candles. I mean, blimey.
From an action point of view, one of my favourite bits is towards the end of it where the Hulk, so Thunderball's coming at the Hulk, spinning the wrecking ball.
Yeah.
The Hulk catches it with one hand. Kind of digs his fingers in and begins to crack it, and then you get a really lovely moment where he basically breaks the ball. So he's breaking his ball, and it crushes it, and he goes, "Oh my lord!" And then he punches him through the side of a building, and you get the eponymous "Nuff said." Bottom right. Yeah, yes, that's a great page.
Yeah.
I'd love that page actually. If I could have a page, I think it'd be that one. To be honest, yeah.
Yeah, it's just and even with the dialogue, obviously, the villain is being all mouthy because he's hit the Hulk a couple of times. And it says, what does it say? "Do I have to stuff this wrecking ball down your blasted throat?" And, of course, the Hulk doesn't say it, so it's all with Claremont's narration. "Not quite, Thunderball, because as every Marvelite knows, the madder the Hulk gets, the stronger he gets. And you have made him very, very mad." And that's just... And then you get the panels of him, like, absolutely just destroying, like, the wrecking ball. Which he must have got another one at some point.
To a penny, those wrecking balls.
Well, I think in this time they weren't they? Because like Absorbing Man had one, and everyone.
And then Nighthawk does that clever thing where he sticks his jetpack, which he's had hidden under his cape the whole time. He sticks it onto Bulldozer, and Bulldozer flies off into the air. That didn't take much, did it?
No. Luke Cage beats Piledriver by basically sort of moving quickly
it's
and
like
outthinking him,
isn't it? Almost,
And then who takes down the Doctor Strange takes down. So there's a nice sort of each member of the Defenders has got like a villain to fight. So they all take one down each. It's actually this issue in the first couple of pages of this issue, just after the heroes and the villains have been talking for a bit. that the Wrecking Crew, within the space of four panels, defeat the Hulk, Power Man, Nighthawk, and Doctor Strange in one go.
Oh,
and it
they
says
do.
10 seconds,
right.
No more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they just, and then they run off, and that's the Defenders catch up with them, of course.
But I
just thought,
when you look at it that way,
yeah.
You're making a lot of work for yourself there, aren't you?
But I thought, yeah, they got one page where they beat like those four characters. Yeah. I'm happy with that. They may have got Mullard in the end.
Yeah.
But speaking of those alternate dimensions that Doctor Strange has, he immediately picks up Wrecker's crowbar and just bamps it somewhere.
Yeah, I found that a bit of a strange one. Hey, Mr. Wizard, Power Man, thanks a lot, shouts everyone in the crowd. Great.
Yeah.
And then they find the bomb.
Yeah, because they're in Harlem, aren't they?
Is it Harlem, is it? Oh, of course it is, because that's where Luke Cage lives. Yeah.
Yeah, and it is very much... It's quite a sort of socio-political sort of place to have this, you know. Obviously, it's in Luke Cage's backyard, and they were being very, you know, they were thinking about what they're doing with Luke Cage, and obviously the Harlem neighborhood and stuff.
Yeah, and the sort of nowhere to live, you know, social housing kind of element to it, isn't there, a little bit?
So it was nice to see the heroes in that kind of element, and that's when you get the real street level. Sort of part of the Defenders, don't you? If you think about it, Doctor Strange shouldn't be a street level character. But I quite like the fact that he is.
I was always more comfortable with the Defenders, and I know they're sort of this cosmic group of people who fight all kinds of things, you know. But this, I kind of like. I find that this like comfort eating. I kind of like just they're on the streets of New York. I don't want them to be in another city. I don't care about Detroit, you know. I want all Marvel superheroes to be in New York. I want them to wander about in New York, getting into trouble.
But I like the idea of, like, just because they're street level heroes, they shouldn't have street level power sets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, they shouldn't all be like nowadays. They would do a Defenders, and you know, you'd have the Daredevil, Luke Cage, much like the Netflix.
Yeah.
You know,
well, they have done
show
that.
Was.
Yeah.
They'd have like that. Yeah. Whereas it's nice to just throw in a couple of characters that almost would have no place being there.
Yeah.
Which makes the reason that they're more interesting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's almost a bit like...
Defenders is just a name with the Marvel Universe now. That's all it is. It doesn't have an identity, does it?
And
anymore, I used to
quite like watching Barbara Norris, a.k.a. Valkyrie, just push her hair over her face and wander about as a real human, looking confused in rough New York. And now, of course, she's an Asgardian of the galaxy, or whatever she is now. You know, she's in that sort of thing. Oh well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're closing on the hour. We're going to talk a little bit about the ending here. Ending is they kind of thought, how can we get rid of the gamma bomb? And then the Hulk says, gaze deeply into the eye of Agamotto and relax. That's a line you've used. And the Hulk doesn't understand. And then he sort of calms down and he becomes Bruce Banner. And then they need Bruce Banner. And then he sort of sorts it out, and he turns back into the Hulk at the end of it because he's so wound up. Is that right? Is that how it works?
Within the space of one page, turns into Bruce Banner, fixes the bomb, and then before you know it, he's back to the Hulk again. Job done.
Yeah, and that page, which is sort of two thirds of him like grimacing and making faces and going a sort of slight sage.
Yeah,
that's one very Klaus Janson, and two. Straight out of the TV series, because he kept doing that sort of thing in the TV series. I don't know if you remember watching it, but there's one where he's trying to land a plane, and he doesn't want to get angry, and he's trying to hold the Hulk back from while he's landing this plane because the pilot's had a heart attack or something. And that's very what this was here, and I can see that. But
I can totally see
that. There was
other
things they could have done. I mean, he can warp realities. Couldn't he have just sent it to the moon or something? You know, sort of.
yeah. It was very It was a shortcut, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then the Power Man sort of wanders off. His collars seem to have grown. If you look at the third from last panel.
That collar is massive.
What's happened there? That's definitely grown through the issue. There must be some underlying story that Len was wanting to tell us about the length of his collar. But at the end there, it's just massive. And he sort of wanders off Spider-Man-ish into the darkness. Next time you need my help saving the world, I'm not at home, okay? And that was always the thing with Luke Cage, wasn't he? He was sort of slightly torn about he should be getting paid, because he was a Luke Cage hero for hire, but he kind of did things anyway, which is kind of what he is.
Yeah.
The colouring's a little bit off on that last page on the Marvel Unlimited. I don't know what it's like on the... I can't remember what it's like on the actual issue, but there's some...
It's okay. Yeah, it's not too bad. It's not too bad.
Yeah, he was never a big lover of backgrounds, was he, Sal? There's not a huge amount there.
No. Yeah. Like there's a panel of the Hulk's face on the last page when he says, "Magician, what happened to Hulk?" And I can tell that there wasn't a background on there, and Klaus has put in a lot of black behind him.
Yes, hasn't he? Yeah.
So, no, I thoroughly enjoyed... reading these three issues. They're just fun. It's just proper old school comics with some fun villains, which is what the Wrecking Crew are.
Yeah, we forget this, don't we? If we involve them in a story, we think there's got to be some kind of cosmic galactic like inevitability of something, you know, the universe ending.
Yeah.
I said this last week, I just want villains to rob banks sometimes.
And occasionally like you have those comics that delve into that sort of street level, or they pare them down. I remember when Mark Waid sort of redid Daredevil when he brought it straight back.
Oh, I'm sorry, can I pause there for a second? So I've just got to read out one of the adverts from one of our sponsors.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
So with all this lockdown stuff on at the moment, there'll be a lot of people up for sex when the lockdown ends. Think of the coin you can make banging or getting banged. In the back of a Ford Transit, in the woods with strangers watching, or in a cosy budget hotel. What a time to be alive. Then why not be a prozzy? So, sorry about that. Sorry to interrupt you. Just first of our two adverts.
That's all right. That's all right. Is there some sort of application form?
I'll send you it in. I'll post it to you with gloves on.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks.
So a couple of questions for you. Let's start with the main one. So out of 10, you have to give these three issues. As a one story, you have to give it out of 10. What are you going to say?
As one story, yep. so one rating. A high eight for me.
Nice.
Yeah. I hadn't read it before I got the issues, actually, from the Comic Mart. So it was just an absolute joy reading some old school comics like that. So that's why when I picked them, I was thoroughly looking forward to rereading them.
Good stuff.
You know.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay, and who is your favourite character of them all? So you get to choose villains, heroes. Who's it going to be?
I have to pick one.
It's a team book, so I thought we'd choose a person out of it.
Wrecker.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I like the old school green costume. There's something about that green that's just the green and purple almost.
The green and purple. Yeah. And the Wrecking Crew just had a fantastic sort of color palette anyway. Red and white, green and yellow. And eventually it was like orange and silver and green and purple. Yeah. They just looked fantastic.
Now you say they're probably designed for action figures, but that probably wasn't the case back then.
Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah.
And favorite contributor from a creative point of view, who are you going to say?
Sal Buscema, right. I would probably
just
say.
Yeah.
I would say just for the art and purely... Just that, and the entrance of the Wrecking Crew alone, that, you know, that the double page spread and then the next page on issue 18, you know, that did it for me. That was like, yes, pays more. And also, as we said before, that the fights, just the energy in the fights is just so good. Just so good. You know, if you took all the speech bubbles and everything else away, you still have something, you still know exactly what's happening, what's going on. Beautiful stuff.
Would it be a set of characters that you would draw a story about? I can see your style suiting it, dude.
What the Wrecking Crew or the Defenders? I would love to have a bash at drawing them. But it's one of those things that I don't think I'd ever be happy with anything I drew. You know when you got your favourites. Yeah. And you almost put too much pressure on. I remember when I've tried to sort of sketch them before. Perhaps I should try again, actually.
Yeah, they make a nice little team,
at some point.
They're very sort of... there's no one who's, like, hugely bigger than the others. There's no... You know, there's none of that. The pile driver's a little shorter, I suppose. But, you know, because he's sort of squatter, isn't he?
Yeah. But they're all just, like, giant slabs of meat.
Are,
that's what they are. And I know in the modern comics, their design has changed somewhat. I know Thunderball has... Obviously, he doesn't have the afro-like hair anymore.
Yeah.
Bulldozer, I think last time I saw him, he's got a mask which completely covers his face.
You're right, yeah.
But Yeah, the classic look is the one
for me.
Yeah,
and there's been the odd replacement over the years, isn't there? There was a replacement for Bulldozer and Demolisher, and I think Bulldozer's daughter was, I think, something like that. Yeah,
it's Bulldozer's daughter was the second Bulldozer, and what was the other ones we got here? Excavator, who was a teenage son of Pile Driver.
Right, Excavator. That's not very threatening, is it?
No. He wielded an enchanted shovel that broke in his very first battle. Which I think he must have been written to be absolutely rubbish.
Yeah.
And then there was another one called Demolisher, who was a mercenary. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, there was, wasn't there?
Yeah, you don't need to know.
That one as well. Yeah. On a job for Wilson Fisk. And I think in the Ultimate Universe, they were kind of the Damage Inc. They were the ones who went and cleared up the mess that superheroes made.
Yes. Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
And, they were also, when I was looking at them, the thing is, they just sort of turn up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just not, there's not really any arcs based off them. I mean, you know, when you always do that backseat sort of fantasy comic book writing, oh, I'd have this arc or I'd do this. One of the ones I've always had is like, oh, I'd love to write a Wrecking Crew sort of series.
Yeah.
You know, about them stepping up again. Do you know what I mean? And actually being like, because I think that not just with the Wrecking Crew, but pretty much a lot of the Marvel Universe anyway, it's the villains that they don't do anything with that have so much potential, because all of the big powerful ones now are so overdone. It's so watered down.
Thanos, for example.
You know, I don't care about Thanos. Ultron bores me, you know, and things like that. You know, there's a lot of this stuff where, I mean, I'm not saying that they're not going to be written well in the right hands, of course, but I just think there's so much more potential with the people that are like the C-listers. You know, they've always held more interest with me, which is probably the same when it comes to heroes and stuff.
When you think
of
the characters like the Hulk and, to a certain extent, the Defenders and Spider-Man and Daredevil and Cap, they were almost a villain of the week thing occasionally. You know, on and off, they were a villain of the week. And there must be so many villains back there who have never been used again. And why these people aren't mining the Marvel Guide to the Universe, whatever it's called, Handbook to the Universe, to find characters, I don't know. I mean, occasionally you get some wanky one that was once a fucking marauder or something, you know, and you think, oh, Christ. You know, but there's loads of like crazy villains that appeared in, you know, where's Rocket Racer, for example, or something like that. You know, there's a lot of that going on. Cool. Excellent. Yeah. Thanks for that, mate. We'll do a little, we'll have a quick 5 minutes on your books. But before we do, I've got the last sponsorship to read out.
Oh, okay. You've sold out with all these sponsors, haven't you, Tony?
So it's getting nice out, isn't it? The sun is out and the days are heating up nicely. Why not get out of the house, Corona lockdown allowing, and get your meat and two veg roasting? Other genitals are available. Why not play a bit of nudist badminton? But watch out for the shuttlecock. Ha ha ha. Nudism is the best. Give it a go today. Yeah, that's that one. Good.
Well, I mean, that's fair enough. I mean, how far can you hit your cock, Tony?
With a hammer or just on my own?
Well, I mean, you've got to be with someone else. You know, just smashing the cock backwards and forwards.
Yeah, you can't play against the wall with your cock, can you?
No, not like that. It's not squash, you know. You really got to put your arm into it, haven't you? I mean, if you think about it, we're all nudists every day underneath.
Apart from when you've got a dog called Sharknado. I'm virtually always dressed now. I used to wander about the house quite naked. But I'm mostly dressed now because he's got a bit of a bite on him. I don't want him biting me meat and two veg.
He'll go at you, won't he? He will absolutely.
He'll ruin me.
He'll just absolutely just destroy it. Like, just nibble on your pepperami and then that'd be it, wouldn't it? That'd just be all sure. And then what will you have to give the world, Tony?
I haven't got much now.
You know. You've got to look after your looks, man.
Anyway, what are you currently working on at the moment? I'm reading from the script again. Vincent Hunt, what are you working on at the moment?
I've been quite busy at the moment, in a strange kind of way. It's quite strange. Obviously, I'm working on my webcomic Indigo Park, which is going to be released later in the year.
Yes.
That and it's a bit more of an in-depth booked that, so and I'm colouring
and
it all
you're
myself.
You're
so
taking a breather while you do it, and you're letting it come out when it's ready. And yeah, that's kind
yeah.
of the ideal, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm building up a bunch of pages before I release anything. I'm just going to make sure that I'm ahead of the game when it comes to the webcomic
yeah.
pages and you know, in a groove. I've got a bit of a sort of art editing project which
Yeah,
will
we
be
know. I know about
announced.
that one. I'm kind of involved
Yeah.
as well. We're very excited about it. We've got some big names
Yeah.
involved in that one,
Yeah.
which it will be announced soon.
Yeah.
What?
All be
Yeah,
revealed soon.
You've got two more Monster Squad clubs in the can.
I do. Yeah, we've got more monsters. Yeah, which
It's
is
good
immense
fun.
fun
Yeah,
to
it's good
draw.
fun. I enjoy liking that.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
I've gone slightly puerile on the last two, which made me chuckle.
Yeah, very much so. Especially the fourth one. I thought, is he really gone here? Cool, blimey. Yeah, but it did make me laugh. I feel like as well with Monster Spotters Club is an interesting one because of the lockdown and stuff. I was doing before the lockdown, I was doing a lot of original pages, and when I started that, it was all pen and ink on like Bristol board and you know blue line paper and stuff, and then I was scanning it and then colouring it afterwards. And even with the second one, I coloured it on the iPad. But with 3 and 4, I've drawn them completely digitally because I just didn't have access to the scanner and things like that. I feel like issue 4's the fourth part, as it were, is the one where I've got the style.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It took me a couple of bits to get there. I mean,
yeah,
it all
of
fits
course
in together. It's not
I don't
like
notice that, but I mean, if you think that, you think that, you know, it's
yeah,
you're up close to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I notice it? I don't think I did, man. I don't think I did. So which shows that it's working, you know.
Yeah, and all brightly cut. It's nice to do something just
yeah.
brightly coloured
and
it's
good because
fun
we're on the back page.
Yeah.
And we don't have to put up with all these like long stories, and you know, we just have a laugh and
Yeah.
leave. It's a one-page story. And then you did
Yeah.
the cover. So
Yeah.
this is in the Spark magazine, out of Fair Spark
Yeah.
Books. Little Heroes is the charity that they support. And you did the cover
Yeah.
to issue 2 as well, which is a Monster Spotters cover, isn't it? Yeah.
Issue 2. Yeah. Yeah. And like, it's been lovely having the feedback and like knowing that kids
Yeah,
are
it's
enjoying
great.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just brilliant. You know, I've got a sort of like, you know, the closest thing I'll get to the Beano
It
kind
is a
of
bit,
vibe
isn't it? And that's
to it. Do you
kind
know
of
what
the
I mean? It's
purpose
like,
of it, isn't it?
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so
Yeah.
for those who don't know,
Yeah.
it's this professor and two kids, and they travel about on different planets, and they sort of, the professor is like the grumpy, pompous one, but he always ended up being the butt of the joke at the end in some way. And something bad always happens to him, and it always ends up with the two kids going, "We told you," or something like that. It's kind of, that's the joke of it. Very simple,
Yeah.
in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there's a strange art to
Yeah.
writing those as well, which it feels a bit more complicated than it is, because you kind of just have to get in a groove with it, you know.
Yeah, it's an extended sort of like three panel joke
Yeah,
kind of
yeah.
rhythm, isn't it, really? It's that kind of, you've got to hit those notes. But and also have a, because we're dealing with monsters, there's always a big reveal of some sort of crazy creature that Tony writes,
Yeah,
and then I have to go away and
no,
think,
yeah.
what the hell,
It's
what
as I said
am I
last
going to do
week,
for
it's easy
this?
being a writer. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So you've got a project with Mr. Bloor as well that you're working on.
Yes. Yes, we announced MI666, which is the first proper comic just written
Oh,
by
nice.
me with art by someone else. Yeah, we're putting the finishing touches on that. We're looking to launch in June, to have
Oh,
that
really?
available
That's
in
soon, man.
June.
I didn't know it was so
So
soon. Oh, okay.
yeah. So yeah, we're in a good spot with that. So expect to see more sort of shameless plugging for it.
Are you going to kickstart it, or
People like the
what are you going
name.
to
We're in two minds
do?
at the
Okay.
moment. We're not quite sure what
Fair
we're
enough.
going to do with them, but but we'll see. But yeah, looking forward to that. And then
This
I've
new one that you decided
just
the other day you
decided
were
to
going to do
do
a new
some.
comic. Yeah.
Yes, which is launching on the 20th of April. I did post a little a teaser graphic
Yeah, I saw
earlier
that.
today.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is going to be an Instagram only sort of web comic, as it were.
Such a
Called
hipster.
Black, that's BLAK, and it's a fantasy story, sort of all black and white. It's strange, ethereal, violent, poetic. It's not going to be like
Looks great,
anything
man. I
you've
really like the look of
that
that. Yeah.
Thank you. There's, you know, there's a minimalist quality to a lot of it, very minimalist. And then, you know, it was just a case of, and I know you've said it before, Tony, you know, the downtime some people have had and have used it to just
really
sort of just create.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to sort of take the seatbelt off and just go, I'm just going to do some pages, not think too much about it. You know, just it's almost the Marvel method as well. I'm telling this, and it is going to be quite an epic story, quite a long story, and it's, you know, it's got that Robert E. Howard sort of Conan. You know, there's a warrior traveling a strange land, and all the things that they will come across in this sort of thing. But it, and it's very sort of kinetic and lots of fights and just weird stuff. But the challenge I have as well is because it's all pretty much all black, so you're dealing with negative space and sometimes it's almost a silhouette type story as well. So it's creating these shapes and the reader's mind puts together what is there. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's fun to, because I love all that stuff anyway. And I it's a chance to use some brushes on the iPad, and I've just gone for it. And I'm already quite a way into it, because each page is a panel, if you know what I mean. It's like a square type thing. Some of them will be, you know, there's going to be some flowery sort of language in there, if you know what I mean, just like proper, you know, the old school over the top sort of, you know,
right,
barbarian
like
sort of
yeah,
stuff.
I mean. Yeah.
So that's I'm going to start that, and it's pretty much going to be like a panel or page every day.
We'll see where it goes. So you got time.
So there is already plenty of pages drawn.
Oh,
so
you're turning into Butcher. You're getting Butcher's work ethic there, man.
Yeah, but I mean, when you see the pages that I'm doing here, I'm clearly not, because like the amount of artwork, the amount of work that he puts into his pages, where I'm just busting out these, you know, just having fun and just being very loose
and
with
then
the
maybe
style,
collect
you know.
It at the end, if you fancy, not, or.
Yeah, I think if it all works out well, it'd be a really nice collected book. Actually, I'm looking, you know, it's nice as well. The iPad has this sort of this preview sort of panel thing. So like as you work on page, and I'm working in numerical order, so I can, you know how you have a thumbnail, like when you look at computer files and stuff, it's that kind of thing. So I can see narratively how it's reading.
Yeah, because it's very clear that, isn't it?
I'll have to send you a picture of what I mean.
Yeah, no,
I'd love
to.
It is one of those things where I haven't really told anyone about it, and I've said, you know, I've been quite mysterious online, and I just hope that people get it. So I've started. If you go to Instagram, and it is Black the Comic, BLAK the Comic, and that's where it will just be posted there. It's just going to be the book. I'm not going to post any sort of like pictures of me with my cats or anything like that. It's literally
just going to be the story.
It's
gone a bit nuts. I noticed today.
Well, you know, I can't control it, Tony. I have thick, luscious hair, and
it's like a cold,
you know,
from your hair,
and
isn't it? We all know that.
It's like the volcano in the film Volcano. You know, when the lava goes everywhere. And also, like, you know, I mean, I'm giving my scalp time to breathe as well, because I'm not putting like loads of product in it or any gel or anything. Yeah, well, because otherwise, if I don't do that, it will just be chaos, Tony.
As
you can see from just a little bit of, yes. So now I'm just letting
it
be what it needs to be.
That's all I'm saying. We are.
No, we're not going to Blackpool.
You've verbally agreed it.
We can't in this day and age, Tony. We can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that place will be riddled.
It is anyway. Let's face it. Yeah.
If you actually come from Blackpool, or,
you know what we're talking about.
I in no way agree with anything Tony has been saying.
Everyone knows that anyway. Okay, so and now back to reading from the script. So where can people find your stuff?
Just look in your local bins.
In the bins, the green recycling.
You've got to recycle. It's very, very important. No, my stuff, which is essentially just on social, if you follow @JesterDiablo on social media, Twitter and Instagram. I used to be more active on Twitter.
Yeah, you're a bit quieter on there. You've done our comic covers today. Have you done them?
I looked. I picked a couple. Actually,
yeah,
I will
we
post
need to
them
keep
because
a record
there
of
was a.
going, don't we? But there's not much there.
There was a stunning. Yeah, there was a stunning one for. I forgot what book it is now.
Okay.
Oh, I'll
Yeah,
post it later and yours. Yeah, so at Jester Diablo on Instagram and Twitter if you want to follow my daily ramblings. Also, I think that most people probably know me now from the Awesome Comics podcast.
At
so,
awesomecomics.podbean.com or on a podcast catcher of your choice. Okay, that's from my script.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes,
you can also find me normally over at neverironanything.blogspot.com. You can buy my comics at neverironanything.bigcartel.com. Follow me on Twitter.
He's also found
Behind
the Bike Shed
with people's mums. Follow me on Twitter at @ezoyz. Back to the script again. Hang on. Thanks for coming on, Vincent Hunt.
That's quite all right, Tony. Thank you for having me. It was a lot of what does that word
farts.
Say? Is that fun?
It's got to be.
It can't. No, you don't spell it like
and
that.
The rest is history.
Oh,
yeah.
Before we go, Tony, can I just is it supposed to look like this?
Like leave it alone.
Oh,
bye.
Okay. Bye.